Well, good day and welcome to the Lyle Shelton Show. It's great to have your company. Again this week, I'll be discussing the legal action that's been brought against me by two Brisbane drag queens. My good friend Neil Johnson from the Vision Radio Network contacted me and invited me into their studio where he conducted an interview for the best part of an hour discussing the ins and outs of the case. So this week's show will consist of that interview. Sit back and I trust that you'll find this informative. I'll be back on the other side.
Lyle Shelton, our special guest. Lyle, a special welcome along to 2020.
Thanks very much, Neil.
Lyle, let me just start with the Queensland Human Rights Commission. You had an appearance before this commission just a couple of weeks ago, and the goal of that sort of appearance is some sort of conciliation between these two drag queens that have taken you to the Human Rights Commission, but clearly there was no conciliation on the day.
No, that's right, Neil. This is a legal process. I got correspondence in the mail a couple of months ago compelling me to go along to the Queensland Human Rights Commission. As my lawyer said to me, the Human Rights Commission walks lightly but carries a big stick. And you have to go, you have to front up to conciliation. And this is all because, as you said in your intro, a couple of drag queens took exception to public commentary I'd made about why I think drag queens reading to little children are dangerous role models.
And so the use of a court like the Queensland Human Rights Commission, the idea of that is to, in some ways, as you say, wield a big stick and say, OK, Lyle Shelton, time for you to bow the knee in some sense here and make an apology. And you refuse to do that.
Yeah, well, that's right. The official, I guess, outcome was a failure to conciliate. But I guess just to take a step back, this whole process is triggered by the Anti-Discrimination Act of 1991, which outlaws things like vilification, inciting hatred, very vague subjective terms. But they've been used over the years, not a lot, but occasionally, and we're seeing more and more of these cases, particularly since same-sex marriage came about. It's these laws have been weaponized. They've been used by LGBTIQA plus political activists to silence free speech. So if they can claim that something that's been said in public commentary, which they find offensive or they don't like, they will then conflate that as some sort of vilification or incitement to hatred, when really what people like me are trying to do is draw attention to things which are inappropriate for children and even dangerous for children, particularly when you put up role models who promote gender fluidity, some who come with hypersexualized personas in their sort of drag queen personas. These are not the sort of role models that I think mainstream Australians would want placed before their children in a public library with the imprimatur of the likes of the Brisbane City Council. But this is happening all over the country, and it's really gathered steam since the same-sex marriage debate.
Well, Lyle Shelton, I know that some people would say, well, if Lyle Shelton can be drawn before the Queensland Human Rights Commission and then taken on to the QCAT, if that can happen to you because you're being outspoken about what we'd understand as pretty standard biblical values about family and about sexuality, well, what would be stopping anyone being dragged before the same sort of tribunal? Is this an intimidation tactic? Is this something that Christians and Christian leaders ought to be afraid of?
Well, it's something we should all be very concerned about because what this political movement is trying to do, given that it's got, you know, the law behind it, very flawed laws, which were, you know, really set as traps by activists some years ago and amended in recent years to include things like gender identity. So that if you criticize the idea that, you know, gender is fluid, which is obviously what the LGBTIQ movement is trying to now impose on children, we've seen this through the so-called Safe Schools program. Now we're seeing it through so-called drag queen story time. So things like gender identity are now triggers under the law. If you criticise that, they can claim some sort of offence and hurt, vilification, and conflate that in a way that scares people into thinking, well, if I talk about this, then I could be dragged off to a human rights commission or then to a tribunal where a judge, you know, could confine you, which is what could happen to me if this process continues down the track that it's going. So it is very much anti-free speech. It's stopping, you know, public interest commentary on whether or not it is harmful for a child to be exposed to role models who promote the idea that gender is fluid and therefore that they might need to go on to experimental treatments like puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, or ultimately surgery. And there's been a handful of cases of girls under the age of 17 who have had their breasts removed because of this gender confusion and wanting to present like boys. And there's a big debate going on in this nation about the appropriateness of that. And yet the Brisbane City Council is happy to put gender fluid role models in front of little children.
Well, let's come back to the story of why you wrote the article in the first place. Take us back to your motivations there. Some people might be saying, well, isn't Lyle Shelton just being, you know, sensationalist? Isn't he just wanting another headline? Isn't he just signalling to his followers that, hey, he's still there and still is a force to be reckoned with? Take us back to your motivations on writing the article.
Well, I guess it even goes back to the marriage campaign and to my years campaigning at ACL. We said during the marriage campaign that if marriage was redefined in law, that the next phase that the activists would move would be to indoctrinating children. We said that. Now, the Yes campaign said we were lying. They said that was nonsense. They said that all that gay marriage was about was just the love of two people. Stop trying to bring red herrings into the debate. Well, here we are less than 3 years down the track. And what is the LGBTIQA political activists trying to do? They're trying to indoctrinate children with gender fluid ideology and with, you know, hypersexualized role models. So my motivation when I heard that drag queen story time was occurring in Brisbane City Council Library January of this year, I saw it on social media and I thought, well, this is exactly what we said was going to happen. And I felt it was important to make some commentary on it. I keep a blog running, which gets quite a bit of traffic to it. But Neil, you know, that particular circumstance came to my attention on social media because a very courageous group of young Liberal National Party members from the University of Queensland went and mounted a protest in the library and they politely but firmly chanted, "Drag queens are not for kids." And this appeared on social media. I saw that. And then, of course, tragically, the next day, the leader of that group of young people, Wilson Gavin, after a bunch of gay activists and other leading figures from the political left in Australia piled on in the most vicious, vitriolic social media trolling of him overnight, he took himself to the Chelmer railway station very early the next morning and threw himself in front of a train and killed himself. Now, I went to his funeral the week later at Clifton on the Darling Downs. It was unspeakably sad. So I felt like what these young people had done was incredibly brave. They did it because of a failure of leaders to protect children and protect our wider society from harmful ideology. And I felt that something needed to be said. And so I researched what had happened that day, and I wrote about that on my blog, and that has, of course, triggered legal action against me.
And, of course, how that whole incident in the library was framed, the idea that somehow or other a group came in and were making children fearful as they were listening to the story time. What's your take on how that all came about?
Well, none of that is present on the mobile phone video that made its way onto social media. So what you see is a group of very, you know, respectful young people chanting, yeah, clearly and firmly, "Drag queens are not for kids." Now, Neil, if I'd have known about that protest, I probably would have gone along myself because that should never have happened. I've spoken to some of the participants there. They said they didn't go into the room where the little children were. They confronted the drag queen, and you can see one of them in a respectful but firm confrontation outside of where the children were. Now, I think because of the failure of leaders to stop this sort of thing, I think, sadly, that sort of protest has become necessary to draw attention to the further encroachment and indoctrination of children into harmful ideology.
Lyle, how do we judge the mood of Australians right now on this whole issue? And so many of our listeners today will remember that you did clearly warned that this was likely to happen in the campaign. And people were saying, why is he talking about the transgender agenda when everyone's talking about homosexuals getting married? What's the mood of Australians today when it comes to this issue? Is it likely to be the idea of what we began to talk about on this program, the idea of a rollover culture where people are just sort of rolling over and letting stuff happen? What are your thoughts on the mood of the nation?
Look, I think people felt during the 2017 marriage plebiscite overwhelmed. It was this juggernaut of positive publicity about so-called marriage equality, love is love. No one wanted to be a bigot. So Australians waved it through. There was virtually no truth told by the media. I mean, we're seeing the fruit of the lies now. I believe the mood of the nation would be very different if the truth could be told to them. And as much as Vision Radio is terrific and so important, our mainstream media are doing a massive disservice. We have fake news where people are not told the facts. And I think if people, if the average mum and dad knew what these drag queens represented, the ideology, things that they want children to understand about gender and about sexuality, I think most mums and dads in Australia would take a dim view of that. So somehow the truth has got to get out there, and I think the mood of the nation would very much turn against the direction where we've gone, along with rainbow political ideology. I think there'd be a lot of buyer's remorse at having said yes to so-called marriage equality, because that's not what we were buying back in 2017. We were buying a much more sinister agenda, and that's playing out right now.
Well, Lyle Shelton is our guest, and we'll continue our conversation in just a few moments. And I'm going to ask Lyle about what drag queens represent, because if we think this is just a fun activity, it may go a little deeper than that. We'll come back in just a few moments, where our special guest is Lyle Shelton. And as I said earlier, he had an appearance before the Queensland Human Rights Commission just a couple of weeks ago. There is a dispute with a couple of drag queens over issues of drag queens reading stories for children in public libraries. And that's been escalated now to a new level in court. And this new level in court, let me just ask you about levels in court, because sometimes this is confusing, Lyle. The conciliation process that happens at the Queensland Human Rights Commission, going on now to QCAT, the Administrative and Tribunal. And then where would it go from there if nothing's resolved when you have this latest appearance?
Yeah, well, from the tribunal, we would probably go to a real court, if I could use that terminology. I don't want to trivialise this process, but in my view, these laws are deeply flawed, and we have a kangaroo court type process going on where people like me are forced to go to the Human Rights Commission and then along to a tribunal where a judge hears it. If we lose there, we will most certainly appeal, and that would put us in the Supreme Court of Queensland. Now, that's very serious, and that's, you know, whole other levels of legality. Already it's cost thousands and thousands of dollars just to go through the Queensland Human Rights Commission process, and now we've got to raise tens of thousands of dollars to go to QCAT. My opponents are being backed by the LGBT Legal Service, and I checked on their website and read their annual report. In the last three financial years, they have received $400,000 from the pockets of Queensland taxpayers. So this is taxpayer-funded litigation to squash my freedom of speech, and by extension, the freedom of speech of mums and dads everywhere who are concerned about where the LGBTIQA plus political agenda is taking their children.
Okay, so is it true that it could cost you or your supporters somewhere in the vicinity $60,000 to $100,000 just getting through the QCAT level?
Yes, that's right. That's what I've been advised. Already it's cost us thousands of dollars, more than $10,000, just to go to the Queensland Human Rights Commission. I'm being represented by an excellent law firm called the Human Rights Law Alliance. They were set up initially by Australian Christian Lobby. In fact, I was on the board at the time when it was set up, not thinking that I would. I thought, well, maybe one day people like me could find themselves in trouble. I never thought it would happen so soon. And I can't say, Neil, how comforting it is to have that sort of legal representation. I would hate to be going through this on my own without a law firm that understands freedom of speech and freedom of religion.
Lyle, let's come back to what drag queens represent, because some people might be thinking, oh, it's a little bit of fun, a little bit like a Barry Humphries character, a Dame Edna Everage sitting in the library telling children some stories. So what's so wrong with drag queens telling stories to children in our publicly funded libraries?
Well, these particular drag queens come as part of a political agenda that's being brought by same-sex marriage activists and by extension the whole LGBT activism. So this was never going to stop at redefining marriage. And of course, we said that at the time. So the aim is to try and indoctrinate children into queer theory. So they present role models that are gender confused and sow the seeds in children's minds that they may, you know, not be the boy that they are or the girl that they are, that they could be trapped in the wrong body and that it might be appropriate for them to do what their drag queen role model is doing, and that is change their gender. Now, of course, changing your gender means embarking, well, initially on social transition, you know, a boy wearing a dress, vice versa, and then things like puberty blockers, which you know are known to have harmful side effects, as are cross-sex hormones, which are designed, you know, to allow a girl to grow whiskers, etc. And then, of course, surgery, which has been happening in you know a small number of cases, but increasingly, where you know a teenage girl might have her breasts cut off. This has been happening in Australia over the last few years. We have an epidemic now of children attending gender clinics around the nation since the so-called Safe Schools program, you know, became a thing about 5 years ago. It's gathered steam in the wake of the same-sex marriage plebiscite, as they've forced gender fluid indoctrination into schools under the banner of Safe Schools. In Queensland, it's called Respectful Relationships, where it's compulsory for kids to be taught that their gender is fluid. This is happening now. A lot of parents don't realise it. It's all documented. You can find it on my blog and my website. Others have also documented it. So this is why it's extremely dangerous. That's one aspect, Neil. The other aspect is, of course, the hypersexualised nature of some drag queens. They are essentially adult entertainers. They represent sexual libertarianism and expressionism and a moral framework which, you know, is anathema to human flourishing. It's anathema to you know, marriage and family and loyalty and the sort of stable, you know, structures that come from the, you know, a mother and father being loyal to each other. It doesn't promote that idea of human flourishing at all, of the family unit. It says that there's another way to express yourself sexually, which of course, you know, mitigates against the family.
I imagine that the type of drag queen that would be likely to be telling stories to children in a library is going to be someone who is quite an extroverted personality. And as you say, and just to pick up on this idea, adult entertainers, people who are appearing in clubs, sometimes as comedians, sometimes with all sorts of acts that they might be involved in, there's a difference, isn't there? It's not just someone who's, you know, come from their local community and a reclusive type of person, just wanting to go down there and tell some nice stories for children. The type of people who are appearing are likely to be those adult entertainer types.
Many of them are, and that's well known and well documented. They are people who go to adult clubs and perform, you know, in ways that would be out there sexually, sexual expressionism in a way that's, you know, different perhaps to the morality that, you know, a husband and wife would pursue in the pursuit of raising their family. Now, you know, it's a free society. People can do what they like, and I don't, you know, I have a view on that sort of thing, but people are free to express themselves. But then to put a role model like that, who comes from that adult world of sexual expressionism, that out there sort of side of things, and put that in a library reading to children as some sort of a role model is just ridiculous. I mean, kids can Google these people's Facebook pages. It's not the sort of place that you would send a child. It's not the sort of place. You know, most kids have access to Google. They have access to computers and the internet. If they're being provided these role models and decide to Google who they are, they're in for a very unpleasant surprise. In fact, parents would be in for an unpleasant surprise.
Well, I'm sure there'd be an argument there where the drag queens would be able to say, well, we can separate our persona. What happens in the adult club? We can change the way we present to children. Of course, we're not going to be telling bawdy jokes or doing all sorts of things in the library while there are children present. I guess unless it's the type of reading material that they might choose to read to children, I'm get your thoughts on that too, but this idea of separating the persona from the adult entertainer to just being the story time, you know, motherly type, that's the sort of thing that some people might think would be easily done.
Well, you know, I guess you've got to ask the question, why do you have to have drag queens to do that? There's all manner of people who can come and read to children. Of course, reading to children is a good thing. As Lauren Southern said on Sky News the other night, in the same way you wouldn't bring, you know, a commando from the army to come and read to little kids as some sort of a role model, because you don't want kids to be thinking necessarily about, you know, a career in assassinating people. It's just not, there's things that are just not age appropriate. And so why you have to have, these sort of personas, hypersexualized personas, gender fluid advocates as role models with children. I appreciate where you're coming from and asking those questions, and it's good to play devil's advocate, but I think we've got to see this for what it is. This is political indoctrination and ideological indoctrination of children at a very, very young age, designed to confuse their little minds about what's right and what's wrong about gender and what's appropriate about how they might want to express their sexuality as adults in terms of, you know, how they form families in the future.
Lyle, after the news, let's come to what this might mean for the challenge that is confronting Australia right now around freedom of speech. Just briefly, have you got a thought or two in the lead up to the news? Freedom of speech issues here are in play. You're being accused of saying you're trying to make it into an issue of freedom of speech. Well, is that the case?
Yeah, absolutely. If we can't discuss this and have open debate, then it's just assumed that only one side should be heard and that only one side is appropriate. There is a very serious debate going on in this nation. Only a few courageous people are engaging. One is Bernard Lane of the Australian newspaper, who has been exposing what's been going on in these gender clinics and how that's actually causing harm to children, and how this medical practice of treating children who might be confused about their gender is actually hurting them. That's a live debate that's going on. It's a debate that the LGBTIQA+ political movement does not want discussed, and very few have the courage to discuss it. And because of these laws, most people won't discuss it because they're afraid of being dragged off to a commission or a tribunal. And quite frankly, I can tell you it's not much fun.
We've been talking about what drag queens represent, Lyle. Let me ask you what you think the intent is, because there's a publicity issue here. The drag queens are saying, well, let's get some more publicity because drag queen story time should be just normal part of day-to-day life. Some people might be saying, well, here's Lyle Shelton. He's refusing to conciliate. That's going to raise publicity. And, you know, what might be ahead for Lyle Shelton? Well, who knows? But this idea of normalisation of drag queens, what are your thoughts around that?
I think it's very dangerous. I think if you indoctrinate children into the idea that gender is fluid, as we've been talking about this the last half hour or so, that has dangerous consequences for children. And there's many people who have transitioned and changed their genders and realised that they've made a big mistake. They're suddenly infertile as a result of the various treatments. They've had surgery, which is irreversible. But the LGBTIQA+ political movement wants to normalise the idea that gender is just a social construct. So whether you're born with a penis or vagina is immaterial. They say that gender is assigned at birth by that evil doctor or midwife who saw a penis when you were born and wrote boy on your birth certificate. No, that's an evil thing because that's assigning something to a child before they even have the ability to work out whether they're a boy or a girl. I mean, it sounds fanciful, but this is what the LGBTIQA+ political movement believes. It's what the Safe Schools program that they have forced into schools, respectful relationships here in Queensland. It's what it preaches. So this is why it's dangerous. And I just need to make the point, Neil, too. It's, you know, I don't want to divorce these drag queens from the idea that the fact that they are people. Now, I think they're people with misguided political ideology and moral philosophy. I hope I'm allowed to say that in this day and age, but they're still people. And I said this in the conciliation at the commission, that they are created in the image and likeness of God. That's what I believe as a Christian. I believe that's the truth. And so all people are equal and all of value, but not all ideas are equal. And we, in the Western tradition, have this idea of debate and free argument so that we can contest things that are put forward for public policy, discuss it, and then settle on it. But unfortunately, the law is now rigged against free discussion. And instead of debating me, the LGBTIQA+ political movement doesn't have to debate. It can just litigate.
So we're not talking about facts and biological science. We're talking about an ideological position. And the interesting thing is, as you say, why can't we have an adult conversation and put the facts on the table and let people decide? But you've got an enemy situation. And the assumption is, because the drag queens make you an enemy, that somehow or other your response would be that the drag queens become an enemy. And so when you say we're all created in the image and likeness of God, what you want to be able to have is a peaceful, fact-filled conversation, not correct, one that's actually going to be weaponized.
Exactly. It's not about good people or bad people. It's about good ideas and bad ideas and what's appropriate for children in civil society. What I said at the commission, I drafted an opening statement. And this is how the process works. Each party does that. And I've published my opening statement on my website. People can go and read it. And I've tried to be very respectful to those which are bringing the action against me. But I've wanted to engage in the substance of the debate. Now, unfortunately, this whole process, the substance of the debate is not even up for discussion because the law is rigged in a way that these very vague and subjective terms under the Anti-Discrimination Act can be weaponized against someone who simply engages in debate. So people feel offended or vilified just because you have criticized their ideas. They take it personally, and the law allows them to do that. And it's a deeply flawed law. We tried to point this out during the marriage campaign. In fact, Senator James Patterson and Senator David Fawcett put forward amendments which would have defanged these anti-discrimination laws in a post-same-sex marriage world so that activists couldn't do what they're doing to people like me. Unfortunately, those amendments were voted down, and sadly, many people in the Liberal Party voted against those freedom of speech amendments, and as a result of that, I'm now being taken to a tribunal. That could have been fixed in the wash-up of the same-sex marriage debate, but politicians on both sides voted against free speech.
I wonder what this means for the libraries, which are run by local councils. In the case that we're talking about here, it's the Brisbane City Council, and the Brisbane City Council's given their assent that this drag queen story time should continue. But are they under the same sort of legal framework there where they wouldn't be able to refuse to have drag queen story time? I wonder whether you've got any thoughts on how the local level of government actually is affected by these state or federal laws.
Look, legally, they could refuse it if they had the moral courage. And sadly, the Brisbane City Council, led by Lord Mayor Adrian Schrinner, don't have the moral courage to say no to this. Now, I don't think they could get taken to a tribunal or a commission for saying no. But because these laws are there, and because no one wants to be considered a bigot or a bad person, which is the way this whole debate has been framed in the last 10 years or so, that if you don't go along with the LGBTIQA+, rainbow political movement's agenda, then somehow you're a hater or a bigot. And this is the thing that's grieved me the most about this debate. I've been involved in it for many years. I don't hate anyone. I've met many of my antagonists at parliamentary inquiries, in the halls of parliament. I've had meals with them. I'm very willing and keen to engage, and have done on at a very civil level. But in the media and in the public, they frame the debate as if you don't go along with it, you're an evil person. So when they rock up to the Brisbane City Council and say, hey, let our LGBTIQA plus political activists read to children, no one wants to say no, because no one wants to be called a bigot. And I can tell you, today is We're at Purple Day, and I know people who are going into their workplaces today, because this is a celebration of all things, same sex and LGBTI, that they're afraid of what they might say today in their workplaces because they're not wearing purple. I know people very close to me who are in this situation. Like now, we have this pall of fear that's across our society against anyone who has a diversity of opinion.
And if you're not wearing purple, someone will ask you why, and that's where you are put on the spot as to give a reason why. And perhaps a good thing for people to understand that having a reason why is going to be important when these things come up. Hey, Lyle, I want to ask you about where you think things might be going in the future with this, because is this just the next development, or is this the start of a new phase? I'm aware that there are some new terminologies that seem to be coming in on the idea of drag queen story time, on issues to do with the way marriage works. A couple of terminologies, I'll just get a thought or two from you. There's some new terms, and I've noticed one called scuttle queens. So let's not call it drag queens. Let's change the terminology. I wonder whether you've got any thoughts on that. Another one, identical sex marriage, in reference to what happened 2017, the marriage plebiscite. But any thoughts on changing terminologies and what that might mean for a future debate, or where the LGBT movement might be trying to change things to take things to a new level?
Well, I think this is all about, generating even more confusion in the minds of people and trying to divorce the unsavoury aspects of that which they're trying to normalise, to try and divorce that from people's minds and use language in a way that smuggles in a more sinister agenda. Now, propagandists over history have always done this, have always manipulated language. George Orwell warned us about it, but I don't think anyone ever dreamed that what George Orwell was writing back in the 50s and 60s would become so true so soon.
Let me reflect a thought or two from listeners who've been responding to our Facebook question today. Christy says, anti-discrimination laws are in play. Does this anti-discrimination have two sides? Because it all does seem like a one-way street. What are your thoughts for Christy?
Well, technically, Christy's right. Many of these anti-discrimination acts do contain a clause that prohibits religious discrimination or some form of it. And now I'm not an expert, and I know that it's very deficient, because this is something which the federal government was exploring. But people like us, I believe in free speech. I mean, there's probably a million things on my Facebook page written by trolls, and some of them high-profile trolls, well-known people who participate in public debate in this country. And yeah, I could probably take them off to a tribe, but I don't believe in that. Just because my feelings might be hurt, I think there should be free speech. But of course, this has all been weaponized. Traps have been set in the law quite deliberately to try and shut down free speech. And that's what we're dealing with now.
Carolyn says, hello, Lyle, totally support you and thank you for the truth. No, I don't. That's in response to our question today. Why do drag queens want to read to our children when they are adult entertainers, which is supposed to be for adult entertainment in adult places? What are your thoughts for Carolyn?
Well, look, as we were discussing earlier, this is about normalising, sexual expressionism and a form of sexual morality. Now, people are free to live out whatever sexual morality they want, but I think most parents would hope that their kids would want to be, you know, moral people and form a family, meet a husband and a wife and have children. But of course, the sort of expression of sexuality that drag queens promote is one that mitigates against civil society.
Okay, let's talk another comment here. Paul says, this is an interesting one, do we have the same open opportunities to tell stories of people wanting to change back? Now, he's talking about another issue perhaps there, or have had trouble with their gender transition. That's a little slightly different issue, but what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I know it's very difficult for those sort of people to get their stories out. I had the privilege of meeting a man called Walt Heyer, who lived for 8 years as a woman. He had surgery that cannot be fixed anymore. He transitioned back, and he now goes around. He's an American, but he's been out to Australia. There are many people like him who have what's now called transgender regret, and this is becoming more and more of a live discussion. As I say, Bernard Lane in the Australian newspaper is starting to report on this. Virtually no other journalists in the country are covering this at the moment, so it's very significant that Bernard is, and he's been fearless. He's copped all sorts of abuse. This is a very abusive and vile political movement that will do anything to shut down dissenting opinion. They do not want to acknowledge that someone might want to change back or have regret for it. So if they can indoctrinate children very young, and then shut down the public discussion on this, it's game over. And that, of course, is their agenda. So we need more and more voices speaking out. It was great to see the former Deputy Prime Minister John Anderson quoted in one of Bernard Lane's articles today in The Australian in relation to gender fluid laws passed in the ACT yesterday. So this is coming. It's a freight train that's coming down the road trying to crush all opposition in its way.
A freight train coming. Tabitha says, how does having adult entertainment meet child safe standards? Any thoughts around a question like that?
Well, look, they would argue that, you know, they have blue cards and all of that, and you know, that those appropriate checks have been made. But that's not the point. The point is, what is the example that these people are presenting? If you're, you know, performing, you know, in a gay nightclub or some other adult entertainment venue by night and then reading to children dressed in character by day, of course, that's all about normalising in the minds of children, albeit perhaps without, you know, the salacious detail or whatever. But it's helping the children join the dots between the two in their own minds as toddlers. And you know, that's obviously not appropriate, and it should be allowed to be discussed and not, you know, have that discussion shut down by a legal process.
Lyle, something that came out almost accidentally in a conversation earlier this week, and I'll get your take on this because, as I say, accidentally, and there's a whole story that goes along with that, but the accidental use of the idea of anti-conversion laws used in what was happening, what was developing, what has already happened in the state of Queensland, where the conversion laws, with so far as gender goes, has already happened. And then, as we say, just last night in the ACT, they've passed those conversion therapy laws in the ACT Parliament. But the accidental use of the idea of anti-conversion laws, as I pointed out to the person who made that comment, that is aligned with what we might see in other nations where they have what are called blasphemy laws. And we know that this works in some nations where Islam is the primary governmental religion. And if anyone speaks against Islam, then they can be drawn before the courts because they have in some ways blasphemed against the religion of the nation. So to use that same terminology, anti-conversion laws, when it comes to this, are we seeing something very, very similar that is taking place now and may well, as you say, it's a freight train coming that we may all be subject to in a significant way in the future. Any thoughts here?
Yeah, I shouldn't have said the freight train's coming. The freight train's here. And we saw in Queensland just a few weeks ago this so-called anti-conversion. Let's be clear about what conversion therapy is and isn't. Conversion therapy is not happening in Australia. young gay kids are not being taken off to some church camp and given electric shock treatments or, you know, whatever you saw in the Russell Crowe, Nicole Kidman movie Boy Erased. That sort of thing doesn't happen. Now, it may have happened in the past. I don't know. I've been a Christian all my life. I've never heard of this sort of stuff. And yet this is being used as some sort of a straw man to vilify Christians and anyone else who you know, has a different worldview to the same-sex crowd. So it's not happening. But what these laws have done is conflated those evil practices of so-called conversion therapy and thrown in gender with it as well, so that a doctor or a health professional who perhaps says to a child, look, maybe you should wait and watch, and doesn't immediately affirm their gender confusion, that becomes conversion therapy. So in Queensland now, a doctor can be jailed for 12 months, for not affirming a child and their gender confusion. The ACT legislation passed yesterday went a step further, and it actually criminalises parents, could jail parents who may not affirm their child's gender confusion. This is really insidious stuff. It is a new religion. It's a rainbow religion, and they are now further and further weaponising the law against good people who don't fall into line with their ideology. It's frightening stuff.
Well, Lyle, we are almost out of time. Let me finish on perhaps something that takes us a little deeper into where our Christian faith is in all of this. And some people would say, I wish I had a thick skin like Lyle Shelton, able to stand up and able to argue. And in some sense, there could be this idea that we argue these things on an intellectual level alone. I wonder if you've got any thoughts on digging deep in those wells of empowerment that come from the presence of God in our lives as Christian believers, to be able to be bold, to be able to stand and to be able to present a position on truth. What are your thoughts about the need for Christians to draw deep on those wells of their own spirituality to be able to have the substance by which we can stand?
Look, absolutely crucial. I mean, all of this is a spiritual debate. The idea that your gender is divorced from your biology, that's a spiritual sort of, you know, this is an alternative religion that is being presented to our society. So obviously we've got to draw from the true wellspring of spirituality, which is through Christ and through the Almighty God. But I think we also need to realize that Christians all through history and from Bible times have always found themselves dragged before government tribunals. Jesus was dragged before a religious tribunal, and then a secular one with Pilate. So, you know, the Jewish religious leaders, they took him to a court. Pilate, Paul, you know, found himself before Felix and Agrippa, appealed to Caesar. Peter and John found themselves before the authorities. It goes on, and of course, church history shows this. So, because we have an allegiance to Christ, who's King of the world, we obviously respect the secular authorities, and the Bible teaches us to do that. But our higher allegiance is to the true King, and who's the Prince of Peace, and who is the way, the truth, and the life. So where things don't line up with the truth, our allegiance is the one who is the truth, and that will always get us dragged in front of the authorities of those who are seeking an alternative truth.
Well, Lyle Shelton, we have to draw things to a close. Just want to mention that listeners can continue to respond to the Facebook question today. Do you think publicly funded libraries are an appropriate place for drag queen performers to read stories to children? I do want to encourage listeners, too, to get a hold of your new book. It's called I Kid You Not, Notes from 20 Years in the Trenches of the Culture Wars. You'll be able to find it at Christian bookstores. You can find that in the Vision store. Go through vision.org.au. You'll be able to find a copy of I Kid You Not. We'll have it in the mail to you in no time flat. I also want to mention a YouTube show that you are hosting on what is a fairly new platform called The Good Source, or Good Source News. And so your particular program airs on a Wednesday morning. People can stream that. It's at goodsource.news and good S-A-U-C-E dot news. Good Source News, Wednesday mornings. And is it called a particular, is it just Lyle's moment to shine?
Yeah, well, that's basically, it's called the Lyle Shelton Show. I know that's very narcissistic, but Good Source News is a fantastic new initiative by my friend Dave Pillow, who will be known to many of your listeners. It's cutting-edge alternative media, and there's a range of well-known conservative commentators that are part of the Good Source community. So I've got a show there, James McPherson, George Christensen, Karina Rockettel, a whole bunch of leading lights have got shows there, Dave, of course. And I think it's really exciting. It's going to lift the bar on conservative and Christian commentary in this nation and take us to a new level, because we're not being well served by the mainstream media.
And just to return to a thought we had earlier, that the appearance before QCAT coming up could cost as much as $60,000 to $100,000, and people will shudder at that sort of cost. Is there a way that people can connect with you? Is there a way they can make a contribution towards that campaign?
Yeah, look, thank you, Neil, for raising that. Look, I'm relying entirely on crowdfunding to pay my lawyers. This is a very expensive process. They need to be paid, obviously, and I need legal representation. So people can go to lyleshelton.com.au and make a donation there. All of the money that's being donated there is going towards my legal defence, and I'd be so grateful for that. My opponents are funded by the Queensland taxpayer. We have to rely on the good graces of people who believe in free speech. This is not about me so much, Neil. This is about the future of freedom of speech in our nation, and I hope people might contribute on that basis.
LyleShelton.com.au. Jot that down and make a donation towards what could be a very significant challenge for times ahead. LyleShelton.com.au. Lyle, great getting your insights as always. I know that listeners will keep you in their prayers.
Thank you.
And
really
thank you so much
that.
Thanks for sharing your heart with us today.
Pleasure, Neil. Thanks for having me. Well, thanks for watching again this week, wherever you are around this nation. Thanks also to those who have already contributed generously to my legal defence. I'm overwhelmed by the response from so many of you. And if you're still to give and would like to help defend free speech, not just me, it's your free speech, please go to lyleshelton.com.au and click on the donate button. Also, if you've yet to receive my book, I Kid You Not, Notes from 20 Years in the Trenches of the Culture Wars, Neil mentioned it at the end of the interview there, also go to lyleshelton.com.au and you'll see a tab there about buying the book. You can purchase it there. The feedback I've received has been quite overwhelming. One pastor said to me a couple of weeks ago that he'd ordered 10 copies for his leaders. I know this book is having an impact right around the country, and I'd love it for you to get your hands on a copy as well. So thanks again for watching The Lyle Shelton Show. Thanks for supporting The Good Source, Good Source News. This is a great new initiative of alternative media, which I'm so thrilled to be a part of. So once again, thanks so much, and I look forward to your company next week on The Lyle Shelton Show.
The Lyle Shelton Show is a production of The Good Source, hosted by Lyle Shelton. To watch, listen to, or read more content without the SJW PC fact filter, visit goodsource.news. Good, SAUCE.news. Become a Good Source supporter for exclusive access to live and unedited interview recordings, including the conversations before and after the show.